Transmission commence in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Level 7.
RandomChatter.com presents
the Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division.
Do you copy?
Perimeter breach.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case files.
Authorizing.
Just call us S.H.I.E.L.D.
Access granted.
Coulson, get back to base.
Welcome back, agents. I trust you've all been suitably briefed on the most recent encounter. We'll be your hosts on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. I'm Director Shepard.
And I'm Director Stolten.
And you've been authorized to undergo debriefing on the most recent mission from Agent Coulson and his operatives, presented to the public as a dramatic, hour-long television series known as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Fortunately, you are cleared to know the truth. The truth this week, Josh, is that I think that, since we're going to be talking about time travel, well, time travel in a certain point of view, probably one of my favorite time travel films is Terminator.
Yeah, the Terminator. Yeah, I've never seen the original Terminator.
Dude, you were so off this podcast.
Oh.
All right. Well,
I'm just kidding.
I'll get it on Netflix tonight. Okay.
All right.
I knew you were going to say that. So
Did you?
I don't need ESP to or... you know, whatever precognitive powers to figure stuff like that.
I'm a little worried now. What have you seen anything else by the end of the show? Do I need to be concerned? Should I be doing something different?
I think that we will be signing off from level 7. Wow, that was weird. I had this flash of the an hour in the future here.
Okay, all right. So. Well, I guess I'll just go with it. I don't know that there's anything I can do. So. You just tell me what to do, and I will just keep talking.
All right. Well, don't go up to the roof. That's the first thing that we have to happen. And then the second thing is don't read the what episode we're going to talk about this week.
Don't read what episode we're going to talk about this week. You mean episode 15?
Yeah, that one.
Space-time?
Right. Yeah.
When was that on? That was on April 5th of 2016, I think.
It sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. The one directed by Kevin Tancheroen, that one.
He is so talented. Yes.
He is talented. You know why? Because, okay, get this. Picture the future, right? Now, what would you do if you knew what was going to happen? Like more specifically, if you saw someone that was going to die, that's what happens, see, when you touch this guy named Charles Hinton. Now,
okay,
sadly,
I don't want to touch Charles Hinton, though.
Yeah, I know. I'm with you. See, sadly, a simple touch of this homeless man here, will give you like a gruesome glimpse of what's to come. Now, S.H.I.E.L.D. is a quick and efficient when it comes to tracking people down. So they're going to find him. They're going to find Charles Hinton. Unfortunately, Hydra gets there first. Now, fortunately, before they get away, Daisy grabbed for him, and touched him, and she gets a little peek of their next mission. Unfortunately, she sees a big fight, and Fitz and Simmons are standing in the snow, and bloodied Lincoln is in her vision. Coulson's shooting at her, and she sees a dying Hinton. So she's determined to change this so-called, destiny.
Yeah.
But is that possible? I don't know. Can you change a certain future? Things are looking a little grim. I don't know. Not to mention Andrew's back for the last time before Lash takes over forever, and the team gets a preview of the new Grant Ward. Not so much a preview, more of a teaser.
It was a teaser to the Grant Ward preview trailer.
Right, exactly.
It was a second.
Just a flash. They went back and they watched it over and over, which is what you sometimes have to do.
This is awesome.
All right. Well, you're right. I should not talk about that. I will avoid talking. Wait a minute.
I think you did. I think you dread exactly what you had said you were not going to read.
Dang it. Oh, this is tougher. This is tougher than I thought.
I know. It is not easy. But let me see if I can break it up here a little bit with some news. We found out that the season finale for S.H.I.E.L.D., which is going to be 2 hours, not completely unexpected. The last season finale was 2 hours. Basically, it's just the last two episodes they're airing. Will air on May 17th, Look at this. I'm already looking into the future here. And we have no more breaks, and Civil War will be coming out on May 6th. So we are, this was episode, 15? So I think there's 22 episodes, so there's still another seven episodes, so six more weeks, and we got a Captain America Civil War in between there, which probably will relate to some of the stuff that's going on here thematically, but maybe not directly. So we'll have to see how that works out.
Well, that is what it's feeling like, but either way, they're all in the same universe at least, so they may reference it, but I don't know that it's going to affect the show this year.
So on that episode after Civil War comes out, is it going to be one of those things where they're like, man, that was crazy. Did you see Iron Man fighting Captain America at the at the airport? And they're like, I know. Hey, wait a second. We've got to go deal with these Inhumans and then just forget about what we were talking about there and run over that. So
they could put a little thing, you know, like on news footage. They did that last week on I don't even remember if we talked about this, but on the news shot of the building being imploded, you know, at the bottom, they talked about riots in Hell's Kitchen from Daredevil.
We did not talk about that. I completely missed that.
Well, you know, I saw something about it after we had already talked, so I couldn't remember if we did or not. But so maybe they'll just do something like that. They'll just put a little ticker tape at the bottom.
Hey, yeah, that's cool. That's cool. Speaking of Daredevil, I did see a funny meme where it talks about, you know, like Guardians of the Galaxy are, you know, they their realm is the galaxy, and the Avengers, you know, are keeping the planet safe, and Spider-Man keeps New York safe, and then Daredevil's micromanaging the crap out of this one little section of Hell's Kitchen called Hell's Kitchen, you know, just like a whatever, like a 12x6 block radius or something like that.
Hey, you do what you can, man.
He's blind, for gosh sakes. Give the guy a break.
Yeah, really?
So. All right, well, let's talk about space-time, which I was hoping it was going to be, you know, like in space, you know, Star Trek or something.
Don't count it out yet. That may be coming.
Well, it does. It does appear. Yeah, that is true. We did get another little tease of that. But I want to talk about just kind of the overall aesthetic of this episode, which was, it's really unique. And so we're dealing with Charles Hinton and his Inhuman powers, which I'm going to liken what we see here to film or to a TV show. You know, basically, let me put it this way. When you go to see a movie in the movie theater, you don't know what's going to happen at the end of the film, usually, right?
Let's just,
you know, your brand new film. But what is happening in the last reel of the movie is predetermined, right? It exists already. You just haven't gotten there yet. So regardless of what happens to you while you're in the theater and what you do, you have no control over how that movie plays out. And a lot of people look at this as sort of an argument for fate, right? Things are predetermined. I don't know how much you do like philosophical discussions with your elementary school kids.
Yeah, not too much, really.
No, okay.
But I enjoy it.
So, but other than saying like you are destined to get a good grade on this,
yes,
you are
yes,
going to fail. Those kind of things.
I try to stay positive, but
so because it appears that everything that Charles sees and causes other people to experience happens. But what I think is also going on is that, you know, because our team was, boy, this is so difficult to talk about. I have a bunch of notes here, but like, I still can't really make sense of it all in a good coherent way, I feel, but let me see if I can try. But since, you know, the team tries to make sense of the vision that Daisy saw, and in doing so, they change the interpretation of the events. So, you know, maybe Daisy, you know, if Daisy would not have seen this glimpse into the future,
right?
You know, would she ever have gone forward, you know, with that? But she can definitely change the interpretation of those events as she after she sees that, like, you know, she
right. Well,
she reacts a different way about it. Just like you could when you watch a movie again, right?
Maybe. Well, I like that. I like how you describe that, the way you watch a movie again.
Right, because the first time you see it, you go in cold, and then when you watch it again, you know, it's like her living it out. So she already knows what's going to happen. She studied it, you know, it's, or, you know, like even playing like a video game in the same way that with that Tom Cruise time travel film where he was able to just keep repeating what he did. Live, Die, Repeat is what they ended up calling it when it came out on video, but it had another name before that.
Right. That was actually a really good movie. my wife, she gets the giggles every time he gets run over by the tank.
It's Tom Cruise getting hit by a truck, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, so,
you said, like, it changes the interpretation of it. I mean, I look at it as more of it was interpreted incorrectly. It happened the way it was going to happen, but she, you know, saw glimpses of the whole thing. It's not like it. So it's almost like you saw, you know, somebody else was watching a movie and you happened to come in the room every once in a while and saw certain scenes of it. And so you kind of thought you knew what was happening, but. Or a teaser trailer. Exactly. And so you kind of interpreted what you thought it was going to be about, and then you saw the actual thing or experienced it, and it wasn't everything that you thought. But you realize that the things that you thought were, he was, you know, worshiping Darth Vader's helmet or whatever. So,
I got that right.
So the interpretation originally was wrong, but and I kind of think that's what happened here. Fitz talked a lot about that. I guess we'll kind of get into that, but
Fitz really explained it quite well, and basically, you know, anything they did was futile.
Well, so let me ask you though, what was he correct?
See, I, on my first viewing of the episode, I thought Daisy actually changed something in it, because when we see her, you know, her preview, the flashes that she gets, Charles is lying on the roof, and he says, "I was hoping you could help," as he's dying. And then when we get to that scene and, you know, he saves Daisy from Malik and he gets thrown to the ground. He then says, you know, Daisy has something that she now realizes that he was here to help her. And then Charles says, "I finally made a difference." And so I thought that there was a change there, but then we get an entirely additional section to that sequence where he talks about his daughter and she needs protecting. And then we get Charles's line that we heard earlier, "I was hoping you could help." So really it is, it's like you said, it's her interpretation of the incidents that happened. It was everything happened exactly as Charles has seen it. With the first guy with Abbott,
Edwin Abbott, yeah.
Poor Wolfgang Bodison, man. Oh, he does not have good luck.
That was
from
so sad.
A Few Good Men, right? He was the guy that was, I believe, was on trial, or no, he wasn't on trial in A Few Good Men. He was one of the Marines, I think, that beat up the guy that was on trial. And then everything that happened with Daisy happened just as we saw it. And it wasn't like one of those fake film kind of cheats where it's like, well, you didn't quite see it the way that we saw it. You know, we see it from a different angle. You saw all the shots in the flashes exactly as Daisy experiences them.
Yes.
Which is great.
Yeah, I thought that was great, too.
Yeah. And then what else? Oh, and then the guy, the Transia CEO, when he gets zapped in the boardroom and he sees his men die, that's exactly what Hive, you know, does to them, what Ward does to them. So we have to assume that the Flash we see at the end of this episode, the second Flash that Daisy gets of the spacecraft, which we had already seen in episode 11 when we came back from the winter break, is going to happen exactly like that. There will be a ship floating through space with a cross and some blood and a shield agent and or uniform. I still think it's just a uniform. I don't think there's actually a person there, but I don't know. And then an explosion. But since these flashes are focused on individuals, does that mean, do you think, that Daisy is on this spaceship that explodes, or this Quinjet that explodes in space?
Well, yeah, I'm going to say yes, I do. After seeing this episode, I think she is there. Now, do I think she dies? No, I don't. I don't think she dies. As we found out here, you know, your perception of that could be skewed, I guess, or maybe not even skewed, just misinterpreted. So, right. You know, maybe
I think we'll see it happen just like that. You know, I mean, that's my belief at this point.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. But, it, you know, is she actually on the ship, or is she seeing a view of it from somehow, like a camera or something? Or does she get transported out of it right before it explodes? I mean, we've seen people be transported before in this show.
That's right. They teased Eden Fessy in the episode the other week with General Talbot. He's the Australian Inhuman that can teleport.
Uh-huh, he can. We saw it last season, too, if I can't remember the guy, but the guy with no eyes, you know?
Gordon.
Gordon, right. Now, and he's no longer alive, but we've seen things like that happen before. So, and we've got, seven episodes to get that guy in there. So, I think it's possible. I mean, how'd the plane get out in space in the first place? So,
right. Oh, wow. I just had an amazing kind of, you know, one of those moments of clarity that we have happen sometimes when we're recording here. But I'm just going to make a note because I want to touch on a couple other things before we move down to the next point. Interesting thing also I noticed, the opening shot of the episode is the Robin kind of rolling on the rooftop with the sparks from the fire and the ash falling around it. Immediately, we cut to Charles lighting a cork on fire with a match so he can rub the charcoal from the cork onto the bird. And I didn't really realize what I was seeing, but the shot at the very beginning of the episode, the first thing you see with the bird rolling out, is the exact same shot at the end when he dies. So basically, I think that's saying that he's had a vision of his own demise at some point there.
Possibly. Now, didn't they explain it by saying that whenever you touch him and you have the vision, he also experiences what you do?
Exactly, right.
So
God, that's horrible.
I know, that would be horrible. No wonder he's, yeah. But, nobody else was on that roof with him that had touched him before that opening scene. So I don't know. I don't know who. Maybe
he was touching himself.
It.
Yeah, I know. I mean, not, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe he, you know, there was an X-Files episode with a guy who was the guy that played young Frankenstein? Well, the monster. The dad on Everybody Loves Raymond.
Oh, my gosh.
Peter
Boyle, yes.
He could see people's. He could see the future, but he only saw how people died. And he ends up being able, like, whoever he's around, he can see their demise, but he could never see his own death until one point when he's just about to die, and that's when he sees his own death.
That's bad timing.
It was a great episode. Clyde Buckman's final repose, and it's got to be horrible having, you know, powers like this. I mean, just imagine it. Like, I got really emotional the second time I watched it as his wife was describing the fact that he could never hold his daughter again without her screaming and crying and, you know, seeing dead people and stuff like that. It's just, it's a hell of a life.
Yeah, yeah. That, it was very tragic, very tragic. I think because of that scene with her where she was describing, you know, his daughter and things, it made this whole thing so much more dramatic and emotional than it would have been if he was just some guy that, you know, showed people the future when they touched him. So,
right.
and then he dies at the end, and which quite honestly kind of made everything better for him and his family. You know, it kind of gave closure to it, which a horrible closure, but it's still closure at least. So,
well, you know, the difference between this episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and other fantasy shows that have similar themes, I think, is that what you just said, S.H.I.E.L.D. here, the writers, who wrote this one, Marissa Tancheroen and Jed Whedon, they just provided so much character and so many character moments for this guy. I mean, you really feel for him as opposed to just having a gimmick of somebody that can see the future and just kind of running through the motions.
Yeah, and the other thing that kind of set that up was that very opening scene where he was standing outside Edwin's restaurant and he was, I mean, you could tell he was an intelligent man. He was a sad story. He didn't even know it yet, but he was kind, you know, he had kind eyes, he had a kind voice, and he was just making art, you know, as he said. So that really set up this character by saying, this is somebody you like, and something bad has happened.
Something, yeah, definitely. And it really, you know, just the whole discussion, I think, that can stem from this, that we could probably do an entire show just on this one topic, is the nature of fate versus free will. And I thought, of course, it was very funny when Coulson asks, you know, is this, do we think this is even possible? And everybody in the room was like, absolutely. Yeah. This, and he's like, all right, sorry. It was a silly question. But Fitz, as you had mentioned earlier, completely adamant that it's not even worth discussing this or doing anything. You know, time is time. The future is set. I mean, he is of that mindset. Very strong scientific background. And I think Simmons is, to a degree, that if you saw something unfolding and you know it's the future, that is what occurs. There's just no way about it. And I think a number of the other characters, Daisy especially, is not so sure about that. And my question to you is, given the end of the episode where Daisy now has lived out everything that she saw in her premonition, Do you think she would have a different perspective on this now that she's gotten a second premonition even? Do you think that she's more likely to, you know, be scared or be more believe, I guess, in this?
So are you saying like she's going to be more relaxed because she knows it's going to happen and there's nothing she can do to change it? Or do you think she's going to like worry and panic or try to change it again the way she did this time? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I don't think she's going to try to change anything, but be more aware, you know? I think it's going to freak her out, which it would anybody, I think, even if you had experienced it, because you saw something even potentially more dangerous. She saw a lot of things in this episode in her vision. You know, I mean, she had the whole scenario played out.
Right.
And then the last vision she had with on the spaceship, it was just that one little tiny glimpse. At least that's all we saw.
Exactly, right. Yeah, so I don't think we saw everything that she saw. I mean, I feel like she experienced the entire event, but we only saw these glimpses of it. So because she also gets this feeling, right? There's also an emotional context to it, I think.
Yeah, it seemed like it. It seemed like it. So, and she remembered really descriptive details of, especially like the fight, you know.
That
she was trying to train May to do. So, but in this case, the with the spaceship, it was just a. I mean, there wasn't nearly as much to interpret. There was a few little details, you know, like the cross and the uniform and or the patch or whatever it ends up being. So I don't know that there's as much for her to plan or worry about. She just knows something's going to happen.
What's your personal philosophy about that kind of stuff? Do you think that the future is determined? Is there some kind of intelligent design out there that it sets everything in motion?
I don't see it as that. I mean, personally, like an intelligent design that's planning it all out for us, like we're the characters in some cosmic book. But as far as time goes, we see it as linear, you know, whereas it may not be as linear as we experience it. There may be some sort of other, you know, dimensional thing that causes us
constraint.
Yeah, you know.
Kind of like the way Lincoln described it on the piece of paper, or Fitz described it on the ream of paper with the line and stuff, right?
Yes, yeah. Now, when he was describing that, that instantly took me back to an old episode of Cosmos with Carl Sagan.
Carl Sagan Cosmos.
That is correct. I am currently wearing my black turtleneck underneath my my suede jacket. No, it probably wasn't suede, was it? It was probably like corduroy or something. But anyway.
It probably was corduroy, actually.
So he talked about this very same thing, and he described it. It was much longer. It was like a kind of a, like a 10-minute segment on Cosmos, where he described the difference between dimensions. And he talked about this. He sat at this. It was so cool. So cool. I love Carl Sagan. But he sat at this desk with this flat world, right? And he described the two-dimensional world and how another being, another creature came and wanted to welcome these people or whatever. Anyway, he a three-dimensional being, and he showed how the two-dimensional beings wouldn't be able to perceive this as a three-dimensional being, right? And it reminded me,
if the three-dimensional being was above the flat world, they can't look up because they are only two-dimensional. So
right.
They only can see forward and backwards or left and right.
Yeah. And if you're interested in this video, man, just check, it's on YouTube. You can check it out. Just do Carl Sagan Cosmos and, fourth dimension or something like that.
Yeah.
But
but
the way that Fitz described it, the way he sort of introduced it right up until he got to the book, it almost sounded identical to the way Carl Sagan was starting this off. So, I thought that was very clear the way that Fitz explained it and described it. So I don't know that it's written out for us, like some sort of story that we're playing out. I see it more as, well, I mean, this stuff has already happened at some point in time. So if we were to glimpse that, I don't know that there is anything we could do to change it.
Right.
But
and the fact that you've got television characters, you know, on a show discussing this, it's very meta in the sense that, of course, it's written out. There is someone that is guiding them and has already predetermined everything that they're going to do, right? But
maybe that's what they'll discover, is that they're just all characters on some TV show.
If Grant Morrison were to write an episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., that might actually happen. he did that in one of the last issues of Animal Man that he was writing.
Really?
Very weird. Yeah. The character realized he was in a comic book and met Grant Morrison within the comic book. Very bizarre.
Wow.
So.
Now, see, I hear I'm picturing like Elmer Fudd writing Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but like in the old Bugs Bunny cartoon. Now, but I did think, and you talked about, you know, I don't know, meta or whatever, this conversation about being able to change the future, look at the future. But then they had this conversation between May and Andrew about changing the past.
Right, and she would rather change the past, be able to change the past than change the future, I think she says.
Yeah, so I thought that was kind of an interesting thought game. I don't know what you call that. You know, in the middle of all this, where they're mm-hmm. trying to change the future. I mean, they're really trying hard to change the future. They're trying to make sure it didn't happen the way she saw it.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's.
But you know,
I like this show. It raises these great philosophical points that.
Here's my thing about now. Fitz was so determined, sure that nothing could be changed. But we don't really know. They didn't know anything about Charles Hinton per se. They didn't know what his inhuman powers were. They just assumed that that's exactly what they were seeing. But it could have just been something like, his brain was mathematically figuring out probability of what could possibly happen from this point in time if this and this happened, you know? That could have been what his power was. It wasn't. It turned out, to be very much what they said. But, you never know. So, yeah, I think you have to try at least.
And, right, because if you were to assume that the future is set, I mean, just as a species, as an individual, why bother doing anything if the future's already predetermined? Because it means no matter what you do, that's what you were meant to do. So, I mean, it's kind of depressing to live in a world where you think that the future is set and that someone is deciding everything for you.
Well, as long as you don't use that as an excuse to just do whatever you want,
Okay. Sorry. Whoops.
I mean, you can't. I don't know. I mean, yeah. I guess it. Oh wow, this is getting very philosophical. There we go. See, this is why I don't have these conversations with my fifth graders. It's.
Yeah, I went to film school. I am not one to be able to talk about philosophy, but I can talk about the design of stories and stuff like that. Okay, so. What had occurred to me a little bit earlier when I was talking about just like intelligent design and things like that, Lincoln brings up this point again. He thinks that inhuman powers are designed, that there is some higher power that decides which inhumans get what powers so that there are like a distribution of certain types of powers in the world, leading to a balance, right? I mean, that's the way I'm interpreting what he's talking about, right? Does that sound like I'm accurately?
So you're saying these inhumans are kind of popping up to serve a purpose on our planet, that needs to be filled.
And I'm sorry, and what?
Like a void that needs to be filled. That kind of
possibly
thing?
Or a balance. So if inhumans are going to show up, right? So if there are no inhumans, then life just goes on. But because there was an inhuman at some point, another inhuman pops up to balance them in some fact or in some fashion. It's like Fantastic Four show up. So Dr. Doom shows up to balance them out, right? So he's, that's probably a really horrible choice, but you know what I'm talking about.
So yeah, I know what you're saying.
It's the yin and the yang, right?
Definitely. You can't have the good without the evil.
And we were just talking about inhumans that teleport, and you mentioned that Gordon is no longer alive. And I said, oh, well, they teased this Eden Fessy character who is an Aboriginal who can teleport. And I'm like, wait a second, Gordon's no longer there, so now we have the potential for another character to step in with the same type of powers, and they've teased this character. This particular episode name-checked Raina, who her powers before she transformed, or even after she transformed, what were her main powers?
Ooh, see in the future.
She died, now Charles exists. Is there not some kind of power that says there have to be different inhumans that have certain powers, and if one goes away, the other one has to come back? And then we've got Hive, Grant Ward, who's come back and is this, he's this very powerful creature. This goes back to my point I brought up a few weeks ago with Lash. Lash is now entering his final transformation. Andrew has changed. And is Lash permanently now because Hive is out there, so that whatever is happening needs to balance the two sides of the coin there. It's the whole Hydra shield, you know, the balance of power between the good and the bad.
So is Lash the good?
I don't know. You know, if going to the yin and the yang sort of thing, you know, you've got the white versus the black, but even the black has a little bit of white in it, and the white has a little bit of black in it. So, you know, Hive may not be truly evil, but Lash may not be truly good. I do feel, though, still that in terms of power levels, that Lash is going to have to be the one around to balance that equation with Hive, with the Grant Ward.
It does certainly feel like that. They don't really have anybody else powerful enough on the team right now.
Right. I mean, even all of them together, I don't know, are powerful enough, you know?
Oof, yikes. Wow, this little discussion is just making it even more intriguing as we lead up to the finale. I hadn't really put all that together. That's a great place for them to head.
Yeah. Like I said, that just kind of popped in as we were talking about Gordon. I don't think we have any other really good examples, but I'm wondering if, you know, a character dies off with a certain power, if another character with that same power would pop up again. So, interesting thing to think about and just keep our eyes out for. As an aside, while we're talking about Hive and powers and stuff like this, I've been re-looking through the Secret Warriors comic books again.
Uh-huh.
And the Hydra team that we see at the beginning of the entire series in the Dark Reign storyline is Wolfgang von Strucker, the Kraken, who is a character that is the alter ego of Daniel Whitehall, who was the Nazi guy that we saw. So we've seen both those characters on the show. There's a character named Gorgon, who we talked about. He is Tomi Shishido. Now, we haven't seen that character per se, but we have seen, is it Lucio, I think is the character's name?
Oh, the guy with the glasses.
The guy with the glasses that can turn people to stone. That is similar to the Gorgon character in the comic book. We've seen the Hive, as they call it in the comic books, which is the Grant Ward character. All those are like teaming up as Hydra villains, and there's only one character that we haven't seen so far from the comic books that working for Hydra, and that's Viper, who is a female assassin. Sometimes she has powers, and sometimes she doesn't, because I think it depends on the time that the episode was or the issue was written and stuff like that. So I was kind of interested just to see that we've seen a lot of these characters, and we've also seen a number of the characters on the Secret Warriors. I mean, we've got Quake. There's a character that is very much like the Absorbing Man, even though he's not maybe necessarily on the team. Yo-Yo Rodriguez, who we were introduced to a few weeks ago. So they're bringing really a lot of elements from that comic series in here.
They weren't kidding when they said it.
No,
was,
it totally bears rereading.
Huh. That is interesting. I'm going to have to go back and I have read the Secret Warriors series, and I'm going to have to go back and check it out in you know, leading up to the finale, because they might just bring that together. There was a pretty good battle between all these characters in the and the S.H.I.E.L.D. team.
Yeah.
Maybe we're
leading
up to that.
I don't know. I mean, at this point, you know, I'm just going with them each week.
That's
they
fun.
Have
That's
total
what makes
and
it
complete
fun.
Confidence. Yeah. So far, it's awesome. Before we get away from all this stuff, we've kind of moved away from this a little bit, but you had done a little bit of research on some symbolism of the Robin metaphor, motif, whatever.
Yeah, that was such a powerful image in this. I figure it had to be connected. Well, I mean, they could have picked just about anything, but they picked... At first, it was a bird. I wasn't entirely sure it was a robin when they first showed it, but then he explained it, right? Charles explained that it was named after his daughter, Robin.
The wife explained it.
Oh, was that who said it? Okay.
Yeah, she was talking, because Daisy said, yeah, he had this bird, and that's when the wife started
to
cry.
Oh, right, right. Okay, so which I've always liked the name Robin because that was going to be my name if I was a girl. So I've always liked that. But anyway, so in literature, I looked up what the symbolism for a bird was. Well, and it turns out there's not just one symbol for a bird because there's so many different types of birds. Each bird kind of has a different idea. So I went more specific. I went for Robin. And apparently robins are symbolic of a rebirth or a beginning of a new idea, which, well, I mean, you know, what's more of a new idea than looking at the future, right? It's a gateway to new opportunities. Again, you're looking at the future. And also an outlook towards life. So all of that totally reflects the ideas of this episode. But then other thing that I thought was really poignant by the end is that it symbolizes a selfless act or a sacrificing of the individual. And that's exactly what Charles did at the end.
It's almost like the people that wrote this show were reading the same, you know, website that you were looking at.
maybe so, or maybe they wrote it. I don't know. But they really picked a powerful way to show that. And I love that we're using classic symbols of literature in the shows that you and I watch, because it really makes them a lot stronger, I think. Just an average person that knew nothing about symbolism at all, and of course even knowing birds or robins or anything like that, they would be able to make that connection with that character because of the way they filmed it and portrayed it. So job.
Oh yeah, definitely. And as you were talking about this, where you were saying it was symbolic of growth in personal or spiritual life, the whole final battle where he drops the robin is on top of the Transia building. Trans meaning through, right? But there was a giant billboard up on top, which says, "Moving you ahead."
Oh, jeez. Look at that. I didn't even make that
connection. Ends up getting burned down, right, by Daisy when she accidentally gets it set on fire. But, you know, you've got Malik wearing this suit of armor that enhances him to, you know, provide him more power. You know, it's moving people ahead. All the characters are moving ahead in different ways and stuff like this. Just, gosh, this episode was just rife with all sorts of stuff.
Yep, very deep.
I totally love this episode. I mean, this is one of those episodes you can watch several times, and I think we can even come back to it later. And, you know, again, this is like a
It stands alone real well, even though, I mean, it's definitely connected to everything else that's been happening. But it really does stand alone as an episode that you could watch by itself without worrying about the rest of the season.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about Malik. We're getting a little low on time here, and I definitely want to touch on him because
he is
like a kid in a candy store. He's so excited. It's like, yeah, you've come back for us. And, I've been taught that you're going to, you know, he says to Ward that, you know, you're going to, take us new places. And Ward's like, well, what is it that you think you want? And
yes.
He's like, I don't know. You're supposed to tell me.
He was asking Malik the same questions that you and I were talking about a few weeks ago. To what end? Why did he bring him here? What was the point? And I don't think he knows.
Yeah. I mean, he's just doing what everybody's been doing, right? I don't know. I forgot why we were trying to bring you back. It's just everybody knew we were trying to bring you back. So Ward tells him that, you know, it's about power, right? We all these Inhumans, we have power. And you humans, you haven't felt it yet, but take a life. I mean, how about that? That's a lot of power to be able to hold a life in your hand and snuff it out. And it's, you know, as he points out, it's different than you saying, go kill somebody, because there's no connection there.
Did you get the impression that Malik had never actually taken a life himself?
Oh, I totally. Yeah, I feel that, you know, I think he's probably, I feel we're going to be getting a little bit of a backstory on him next week based on some previews and the, I think it was the write-up, the, what do you, you know, the little preview write-up that they give for the episodes.
Right.
But, yeah, I don't think he's, you know, he's led kind of a sheltered life, I think. And I'm, I don't know, I'm interested to see what, you know, what, where he comes from. Because I think, as Ward pointed out, you know, he's got whatever $9.2 billion or something. It's, he doesn't need to want for anything. He would get people to do whatever he needs done, right? I mean, as a man of the world, he can do, he can do anything he wants in the world. But
yes, and he does. So I don't, I really don't get why I don't, and I think he's starting to realize that too, which is why at the end when they said he sounded so scared, I think he's starting to realize that as well. He's also starting to realize he's not in control.
Well, right. Also, when Charles saved Daisy, he touched Malik, and Malik had a flash, but we don't see what that was.
Yeah, they didn't show us.
I think that's really why he's afraid. I mean, I think he's caught a glimpse of his death. And I think, if I were to guess, I would say he's released something in bringing Ward back that is going to be his undoing, and he is starting to realize that. And I think he stepped in it big time.
Yeah, and I think that would be a very safe bet in Vegas if anybody wanted to make a bet about what's going to happen to Mr. Gideon Malik.
It's really interesting, though. I mean, it's just the we've got Mr. Guerra, who, as Ward had said the other week, you know, that he will believe me or something like that as soon as I show him what I can do. Guerra has, you know, basically stepped over to Ward's side now. You know, when Malik at the end says, you know, hey, you're supposed to be here protecting me, obviously, you know, very flustered and stuff. And he's like, nope, I'm really right where I belong.
Yeah, although he still seems scared too, like he's not gonna cross this guy because he knows what he could do.
Guerra?
Yes. But yeah. I'm wondering if maybe, you know, Hive has shown him something or revealed something to him that also is keeping him there. You know, something about Inhumans in general or something about his plans for Inhumans, I don't know. But I mean, he doesn't just seem like he's freaked out to leave. I think he seems like there's something else bigger that we don't know about yet.
Yeah, that is possible. Yeah, I, you know, and I don't know what his, you know, his plan seems to be that he's going to get all these Inhumans, like he had, like everybody's been saying, that he's going to just kind of raise an army, I guess, but I don't know.
So I think S.H.I.E.L.D. is going to have to get some more Inhumans on their side. Her Daisy's team there is not growing quite as fast as I think it needs to in order to go up against this new threat. So once they realize how powerful Hive is, they're gonna need more help. But
that's not this season, right. I don't think.
You don't think that's this season, huh? You don't think that's what's gonna happen?
I think they've just found out that Ward's back, which was hilarious, by the way. The fact that day just got weirder when they realized that. But I think that they're going to think they have what they need to deal with this threat. And I think, you know, we've got this preview of this S.H.I.E.L.D. spacecraft exploding or whatever. I think they're going to get their asses handed to them this season. And that's when they're really going to have to step things up for season 4 to move. They're going to be the underdogs again. They're really going to have to advance their technology and their recruiting process and stuff like that in order to deal with this threat. I think that's kind of what they're going to do. This will be the end of the season will be kind of a dire consequence sort of setup, maybe potentially with a cliffhanger or something like that.
Okay.
That's my thought.
had not occurred to me. I just thought they were going to win the day again. I thought it'd be okay.
it may. I mean, they do tend to go through things relatively quickly on this show, so it is possible that maybe they will get maybe some kind of Pyrrhic victory, you know, where they lose somebody or, you know, something dear, but they are able to win the day. Who knows? Finally, I just want to tell ABC News that they can go suck eggs because interrupting our show with a, quote, special news report of the Republican primary in Wisconsin. Yeah. As I pointed out to one of my friends, you know, I'm pretty sure the Republicans weren't watching S.H.I.E.L.D. anyway to get that news report because, I mean, aren't they Hydra? And, like, why would Hydra be watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? I don't know.
Well, you know, for intel.
They were all off at Gary Shandling's funeral. That's where they were. So.
Oh, yeah. You know, that is not the first time that has happened.
I realized, though, they literally interrupted the feed, and we didn't actually lose anything for those 2 or 4 minutes or whatever that it was interrupted. I'm assuming you got interrupted as well on your feed.
I think I did. If it wasn't this week, it was last week, because I know very recently I got interrupted right in the middle of the show, and I'm like, whoa, what? They can't do this in between shows? What? But
yeah, East Coast feed. I mean, it wasn't even at a commercial break. It was just like,
yeah,
breaking news, and it was at the worst possible moment, because it was when Malik had just put on the super suit and flipped the table over, and it's like, whoa, what's going on? And then we interrupt this show. I'm like, you have got to be kidding me.
That's what Malik, when he flipped the table over, so see, he knocked the satellite dish out of whack. So
it was. I mean, seriously, and I didn't feel that the news was that important, I guess, but I'm watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm not watching the news, you know. So.
Yeah, well, I guess, and they don't do it during commercials, you know, because that's where they get
their
money,
right?
And where people leave, yeah. Hey, do it during the in between shows, you know. People want to know that, but they can want to know that in between shows.
The more you know, and this episode had lots of other little funny bits in it too. I did want to mention Fitz. When he puts his fingers up in the gun formation, and then he kind of turns his hands to like check that the sight on his fake gun is like correct, and he kind of blows on the barrel of his fingers.
They were having much fun with practicing that infiltration there.
Yeah, we had that, and then what was the other? Just the sweet little moment between Fitz and Simmons at the end when they realized that it wasn't snow. That it was the ash, and then Simmons is like, I think we should hold hands now.
Yeah, they realize, see.
Really? I mean, it takes that for them to want to hold hands? They should, I know, they're taking it slow.
No, we've already realized that they need to go to some relationship counseling there, because they're not surely what to do. But I did appreciate that, you know, in all his studies, as he was eating his spare ribs and you know, raw meat, that Grant Ward became a Matrix fan, you know, and
oh,
a fan
jacket.
Of the Keanu Reeves fashion. Yes, I thought that was very Neo that he was going there. Just needed some dark, you know, reflective glasses, and he would have completely pulled off the look.
That was cool. And that reminds me, when I saw the preview for this episode, it was like Monday probably when they released that. They showed the scene where he and Malik are drinking the wine, and there are those two women that like serve the food.
Right.
One was dressed in red. One was dressed in blue. And I was just struck by the composition of the scene. And I had been trying to I wonder what the symbolism is here, because you've got these two men. I mean, other than the fact you've got two men seated and you got these women serving them. You've got that level of it, but just the fact that, you know, it wasn't like they were dressed in uniforms. They were just dressed in suits, but one was all in red and one was all in blue. And I was trying to grasp for something else that was going on there, but I didn't think there was anything else, but I just thought that was kind of a striking, design setup.
It was kind of interesting. I don't know much. We don't know much about them.
I want to know their stories.
They may symbolize something there too. See, they may show up again in some sort of, I don't know. We'll see. they're just extras, we'll so we won't give them too much time.
Yeah. Anyway, space time. Really, really good episode. I'm looking forward to next week. There was a great tease in the preview about Ward revealing his true self. And if you guys go check out our Facebook page, I put a comparison image up of what Ward appears to be transforming into and what his character of Hive looks like in the comic books as a potential look for him in the upcoming weeks. So
yeah, very similar.
Yeah. I think, you know, again, based on all the stuff, all the similarities that they've got going here, I think that could happen, but it sounds like next week's episode is chock full of all sorts of stuff. And, we'll probably see Malik's, heretofore unknown daughter, show up again. So maybe we'll get some more information on her.
I want to know what's going on with her, man. She's been out shooting skeet this whole time. Now he's got the power suit. He can take her on. He can beat her. See, they're gonna go. They're gonna go play duck hunt, and he's gonna wear the suit, and he's gonna totally beat her.
Oh, that'll be great. I'll be looking forward to that. So, anyway, I think, Josh, that's about all we've got for this week's episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. So thanks for joining me.
Yeah, I had a great time talking about all this deep stuff with you. So if you guys also enjoyed that, we would love to hear from you. So if you could go over to iTunes, we'd love to see some feedback on there, some comments and some stars. Also, we'd like to hear from you directly. So why don't you give us a call or, you know, contact us at email and tell me if I am way off with my my interpretation or my symbolism here. Our email
is call Josh. His phone number is, I'm sorry, should I not give that out now?
No, I was hoping actually you would keep going. I haven't had a call for a while, but no, send us an email, shield@randomchatter.com. Or you can go check out our Twitter feed there @AgentsPodcast and our Facebook page where you can see that picture of Hive and more is at facebook.com/AgentsPodcast.
You can also check out the other podcast shows Josh and I host, including Green Justice and Arrow podcast and Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast, which is actually on hiatus this week. Both of those via the all new randomchatter.com, as well as some other great shows on Random Chatter. Check them out if you haven't done so already. All of our shows are also available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And if you enjoy this podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us. So, for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, this is Jay.
And this is Josh, and I'm going to go, and I heard something on the roof, so I got to go check it out.
All right, well, we're signing off from Level 7.
This podcast is not endorsed by ABC Television or Marvel Entertainment. The official website for Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. can be found at www.agentsofshield.com. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and related elements are copyright Marvel Entertainment, LLC.
Transmission terminated.